Hey everybody, welcome to another exciting episode of SQL Unplugged. I'm your host, Scott Klein, your July edition of SQL Unplugged with Sean Bice, Rohan Kumar. Gentlemen, welcome to the show again.
How are you?
Good, doing well?
Yeah.
Any summer plans, any holidays coming up?
Or? Yeah, it's been a 110 degrees here every day. Not usual, but yeah.
That's right.
August is usually the first 2 weeks. I think we're both.
Yeah, we'll
vacation in August for a couple of weeks.
So no SQL Server problems the first 2 weeks of August, all right? You got that?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you have questions for Sean and Rohan, type them right there in the browser. We'll get to them momentarily. Gentlemen, before the show, we were talking about kind of what we wanted to, how we wanted to approach today's show. Kind of make this a forward-thinking, tread lightly, but a forward-thinking show kind of where we're going with a lot of these technologies that we're seeing in SQL Server, like Polybase and advanced analytics, because of what we're hearing out in the field. You know, SQL Server, we're talking to DBAs and developers, and you know, these guys are, you know, relational, have been relational for a long time, and now we're introducing these kind of NoSQL non-relational technologies. And so where's the role of the DBA going? How do the DBAs think about these technologies? What do the DBAs need to do? Do they need to go back to school and update their, start educating themselves on these new technologies? What does this mean for the DBA? Because I'm kind of hearing a lot about this from the field.
Yeah. I'll share a couple of thoughts. I think if anything, the role of the DBA is going to evolve. And when I mean evolve, it sort of pokes on almost everything you just said. There's the world of on-premise is being the predominant thing is yesterday's news. The cloud is clearly not a niche. Mm-hmm. The way you build applications is changing. What you can do in cloud environments we couldn't do before, like in the notion of the 19 regions with hundreds of thousands of cores that you could gain access to for an hour. That is like unheard of.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day. But if anything, I think the types of apps, like if you look at fastest growing startups and where a lot of investment is going, that the types of apps that are being developed these days are very different than just a pure transactional, I'm writing records. So, it's people including speech, they're including video, they're trying to, pretty much every demo I see now has advanced analytics in it.
Yep.
For example, just this morning I saw a demo of CRM. And, a typical CRM app would have your, 10 opportunities. But the list of 10 opportunities had indicator scores, like the likelihood to close an opportunity. And that's the first I had seen something like that in a
CRM app. Yeah.
Plain CRM app. You know, it used to be, customer's email and contact info. Now they're bringing machine learning. And so if I were to sort of step back and look at the DBA role, I would say, hey, the day of just really strict, rigid transactions and a system being, everything must be done this way for it to perform correctly, I think those days are going to be sort of behind us. I think the new world, like a lot of NoSQL, was born to make things a little more flexible, to make the system more agile. They still want transactions. They still want it to be highly available. They still want DR. But I would assume the road ahead is being able to achieve things in a more flexible and agile way, which means we have to think about how we architect the core relational engine and the overall system. But the possibilities of what you can get after, I would definitely, wrap my head around advanced analytics, because my hunch is these data scientists are probably going to be your most important partners going forward.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'd sort of share a few of my thoughts as well, right? So there's a couple of facts. I mean, data continues to grow at a phenomenal rate. I mean, it's just amazing to see, all the predictions that we had back in early 2000s in terms of volume growth, they're dwarfed by what we're seeing, right? So that's a fact.
It's all lies.
The other fact is, like, Sean mentioned, what we're seeing is cloud's real. It's already here.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Now, it's interesting when you sort of take a look at both of these, when we take a look at our own jobs, and DBAs, we sort of talk about them in the cloud context, but when you think about people like working in core product teams building this stuff, our lives have changed significantly, right? So the thing is, when you sort of believe in those two facts and look at the transition we're going through, I mean, it's just a given that, roles are going to evolve. I mean, that's just So it's not just about the DBAs. I think it's about developers or the kind of apps that they're building. It's about people who are building platforms for the cloud. Everyone's life is going to change. So I think there's a discussion we had around going back to school. I think it applies to everyone, DBAs included, right? Now, there's interesting things just in terms of, you know, obviously the transactional systems were designed for a certain scale, right, in terms of data ingestion. And as those rates are being blown apart by these sensors and a lot of this telemetry data that's coming out, for which, you know, cloud sort of becomes your only option, really, you have these other sort of data platforms that are evolving, like, you know, the way the NoSQLs have come along, or you know, with the Hadoop ecosystem. So data management, I think, all up is going to evolve and change very significantly. So it's no longer just, you know, the good news though is a lot of the high value data continues to be in the database, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're seeing that with the growth in SQL DB, but data management all up is beyond just what we thought about as a transactional system that you're managing, right? And I think, so that's one aspect in terms of, hey, what kind of skills and what kind of tools do I need to learn sort of grow that? Traditionally, a lot of the activities that, you know, especially as you move to the cloud, one of the promises, there's a lot of stuff around things around patching, backups and stuff like that is taken care of. So a lot of those things, the platforms are going to solve for you, but then, you know, data analysis, like insights, and, you know, how do I, you know, build the systems where my time to insight becomes really fast. A lot of these discussions are going on. There, I believe, you know, is where, you know, like if existing DBAs grow their skills, you know, that those are the kind of problems that from a data management standpoint, I think we need to go solve. So I mean, it's, you know, it's a fact that everyone's role is changing and DBAs just happen to be one of them.
Yeah. And those are good points, because I think we're not trying to scare the DBA by any means, right? But I think this is, as not just the role of the DBA, but like you say, all the roles are going to be affected, right? from the developer, data scientists are now going to be involved. But, you know, how do we start thinking about these? Because, you know, DBA, it's not just relational anymore. This is now non-relational. Right?
Yeah, Sean and I have to start worrying about capacity. I mean, you look at it, the old days, we never, you know, you're building the engine and then, you know, so there's a lot of stuff.
The last thing I'd throw on this, or just go through a few more topics, is we get a chance to, I mean, the spirit of Unplugged, of what we really see, it's we get a chance to meet a lot of customers around the world, and you'll find folks that, you know, they've been a DBA working on a relational system for 10, 15 years. And I've met some folks that, you know, you sit down and they'll tell you about, hey, here's a set of challenges I've had just in terms of how do I manage backups across my environment, or, you know, how do I roll out a schema change in a predictable and performant way? There is a lot of DBAs that have definitely recognized all the facts that he just pointed out, and these guys are like, look, I don't want to deal with backups and managing backups, and if the system can help me with schema changes, fantastic. So there's one of the things that we were really wondering, as the role evolves, are people really going to embrace the, you know, the new scenarios and the new world that we're in? And I have to tell you, it's pretty
exciting. It's
pretty exciting across all regions. It's not like one place is more popular than the other, but it's I'm sure as time goes, to Rohan's point, everything we're doing is changing.
Excellent. Which leads us into a couple discussions, a couple points that we wanted to bring up. Things like, you know, let's get into some of the feedback that we're hearing from these early editions, you know, these early CTPs that we're pushing out there, SQL Server 2016, like CTP2. What are we hearing? What's kind of the feedback that we're hearing from some of these releases?
Yeah, so the first, I think it's, you know, the first piece of feedback we heard is, you know, folk, people are a lot more, like our customers are a lot more engaged, just given, you know, the faster reaction time, right? Previously, let's say you installed a CDP and, you know, and you had an issue you ran into and it wasn't critical, you'd have to wait 6 months. And we've definitely seen a change in the behavior, right? There's a lot more discussions around, hey, can we go into production? We already have, you know, 3 or 4 customers who are actually using CTP2 bits that we released back in main production. They gave us feedback that was interesting. For Stretch DB, as an example, there was an issue that came. The issue got logged, you know, the thing got fixed the next day and it made the next monthly CTP, right? So, and the thing got released just 2.5 weeks later. So this is just almost unheard of in the, you know, in the Box product world. So I think the reaction to that has been super positive. There's been some really good feedback on, like, always encrypted, operational analytics. There's a lot of excitement, you know, from folks who sort of have traditionally relied on the ETL side. And like always encrypted, I mentioned. So all the big things, Stretch DB, So all the big things, I think some of the newer innovations people are just sort of trying out. Mm-hmm. But it's actually pretty phenomenal to see the number of customers who have adopted already. I mean, just given the past releases that we've done versus now in CDP2.
Yeah, the downloads are off the chart. There's a couple other interesting things that we've heard too is like, you know, SQL 2005 goes sort of, it's out of
end of life,
I think April of 2016. Boy, there's a lot of customers that, for example, this is probably the most energy I think we've seen in some time around upgrade. So there's new life, if you will. There are a lot of questions, maybe a better way to put it, in terms of, you know, what are you guys doing to help upgrade my estate from 2005 to 2016.
Yes.
Right. We didn't really used to think like you'd think from 2005 to 2008, you'd sort of these sequential steps, but a lot of people are like, look, I want to get value of these features. I want to go straight from 2005 to 2016, which, you know, we have to support. In fact, we have a new tool. I think it's available now for download.
Correct.
Yep.
The SQL 2016 upgrade advisor. Yeah, and it's you know, when you think about having an upgrade advisor to help you assess your estate, but something like QueryStore is getting a ton of positive feedback so that you can move your estate forward, you can have your queries run in a down-level optimizer so you're safe, so to speak.
Yep.
And that, like, you put these two things together and it's
huge. Actually.
It's huge. It's not something in the past we would have like led a discussion with, but today, that's new feedback. That's like top line for us.
And that tool specifically was built by, you know, there's a lot of community involvement in terms of, hey, what is the barrier to upgrade? So folks said things like, you know, typically I don't have a test environment lying around, so could you do something in IaaS? It's very scenario driven, right? If you think where you just go up and say, I have a 2005, I want to go to 2016, that's and I can go click on that.
Right.
So it's very, very intuitive in terms of how, you know, it's been thought through.
Yeah,
and it's a work in progress. It just, I think, really is the first one. And this is where I think, you know, if the folks in the community can use it and get feedback, you know, I know the team is sort of looking at it pretty actively.
Yeah. Especially because we're saying, and we've said this for quite a long, you know, this release of SQL Server is one of the most significant in quite a long time. So to be able to provide the ease and the ability to upgrade from 2005, 2008, and get people easily and efficiently to 2016 makes it
what really happens, like especially for those of us that have been, like you take the upgrade advisor, you can get a quick assessment for it. To Rowan's point, it's very scenario driven. But remember, like a lot of people love QueryStore because they're like, man, if I can move my estate forward, gosh, we were just with an enterprise account a couple of weeks ago, and one of the leaders of their database group, you know, they have a giant estate.
Mm-hmm.
In the old model, they used to be quite nervous because they would literally have to test query by query by query. Just imagine across thousands.
Yeah, an upgrade took quite a while.
It did take like 2-3 years. I mean, that's just like, who does that anymore? So it's sort of, you know, I say that sarcastically poking fun at ourselves, but you just can't accept that to be the norm. And then you look at new investments around QueryStore and how you can move in a tool like Upgrade Advisor to move forward and run your queries in a down-level optimizer.
It's, yep.
No, those are like, those are big things for us.
Yep. So let's move on from a couple other things, because we talked about CTP2 feedback, talked about the Upgrade Advisor. Excuse me.
See, that Upgrade Advisor got you all torn up.
I'm about to shed a tear or two here. Yeah, this is awesome. I'm going to download it now.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. We have fun here. Let's go back and talk about some other feedback we're getting, because one of the big things they announced, it's been announced for a couple months, is SQL EW, right? What are we hearing about that? What are we hearing about the adoption? What's the feedback we're seeing around that?
So the signups, you know, honestly, like we couldn't believe it. It's somewhat overwhelming how many people have signed up, and like every day you're talking. Unfortunately, I'd love to tell everybody the exact numbers, but it is so big. It has instituted a discussion at a company level in a sense of how much capacity we really need. I mean, again, in the spirit of Unplugged, I can tell you that. So the capacity for, you know, both DB and DW is, you know, it's Frankly, in the last 2 years, I've never personally, for the two of us, I've never sat down like and looked at these kind of numbers to spend on just a capital expense on infrastructure. It's huge. So that's good. The problems that we have right now with SQL DW is like spinning up a data warehouse is super simple. Mm-hmm. I think there's four or five. I mean, we could jump into the portal. It's four or five things. You name it. You pick some DWU and point to storage, and off you go.
And off you go. Yeah.
It's the next step of that workflow of just getting data into the system quickly. Yeah. I mean, that's the area that there's still opportunity to make that better. You don't. Yeah. You know, there's an internal property, huge one. You know, taking 2, 3, 4 days to move data from point A to get it into point B, you know, that's the kind of thing you just want to see be as instant as
exactly.
it can.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. The other thing I'd say is, you know, there's SQL DW benefited tremendously from the learnings of SQL DB because, you know, the team has been sort of doing that for years. And at the back end, the kind of telemetry we get, almost every query, right, whether it succeeds, fails, why does it fail, how long does it take, everything is being tracked. So there's a lot of insight. I mean, one of the things we're trying to learn is, hey, what kind of queries, like are people running a lot of long queries, short queries, greater than 10 minutes, you know, are long queries and things like that. And the team is trying to build, hey, what are the investments that we need to make from now, you know, until we essentially declare a GA. And it's actually very, very exciting to see that this is something that we look at on a daily basis, you know, at a per customer basis.
Think of too, on a capacity standpoint. And this is what's hard. You got to go to the whiteboard. Is you see customers and they'll have a query that could have, you know, been a 10-hour query.
Yeah.
And it goes back to this: if you can move a slider bar, you can increase your compute in a dramatic way without tearing down the whole cluster. And you know the feedback that we're getting is you like think of somebody who's doing a quarter earnings report, like think of that scenario. So like a big giant publicly traded company, mm-hmm. quarterly earnings, you're not going to miss the window. So oftentimes you'll see folks with these huge infrastructures that sit around and do nothing, you know, for month one and two, and all of a sudden they're heavily used on month three. Those kind of folks are
scenarios.
Showing up. Yeah, those scenarios show up, and then they're really looking at how fast can you scale out compute, and you know, could I take a 10-hour query that you know was 10 hours, and now try to get it to run in an hour?
Yep.
So there's a ton of learning in the system.
Yeah, just the details. I think the details actually are going to really help us make a super, like, you know, query patterns. What do people do?
Yeah.
On the cloud side, I
think. And you're talking from the capacity. I think these are good problems to have, right?
Absolutely.
Because it just shows kind of, you know, we're going in the right direction, we're doing the right things, right? So these are the good problems to have.
Yeah.
I might shed another tear or two over this stuff.
Capacity and upgrades.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's get to a couple questions here. So one guy asks, you know, when I install on a server, I have to install .NET, and then I have to go install. Why can't we just install everything?
Yeah. So this is the short of this is, yep, very well recognized issue. And the goal for SQL Server 2016 is to sort of remove the .NET 3.5 installation. Mm. So hopefully that's good news. And there were certain dependencies we had in certain portions of the stack. So we are actively looking at what those dependencies are, and mm-hmm. the goal is to get them removed.
Perfect.
So you basically just go install SQL Server, and you won't be, because a lot of the machines already come installed with .NET 4.0 or above. I think 4.0 and 4.5, yeah. So we should be fine there.
Perfect, okay, good. All right, a good Fred Nico from Portugal. I know this guy asked about, what about SSIS in the cloud, any updates on that? Anything we can share there?
Or? Yeah, Nico, what I would say is, I don't know how much time we have left right now, but the any questions that we can't answer in the time we have, I would just invite all of you, just email me directly. So my email is SeanBI. I think we have it
we
up
do.
Here.
We do, there he is, right there.
SeanBI@Microsoft.com. Just send me an email personally, any questions you have on SQL. And if Rohan and I can't get an answer for you on the spot, we can easily direct it to who can. But I would encourage you to look at the Azure data framework. So, you know, ADF is coming along. If you want to go ahead and email me, I can connect you directly with the guy who's leading the work effort there. They can go into all the details for you, no problem at all.
Okay, perfect. All right, next question from Ruben. I come from Oracle DBMS, and in Oracle, when you do an insert, then a select, only you can see the data inserted. So if we can sum this down, I can see a SQL Server that when you're doing the same exercise above, other users can see the data just inserted in previous, you do a commit transaction, dirty reads. How can I?
Yeah, I think there is some more detail that you need in terms of what isolation level you're running at, because you know the SQL Server supports multiple isolation levels where you know you can choose not to see the thing that's committed or not based on what you choose. So again, like you know, if you could just send an email in detail in terms of what exactly you're doing, we can answer that question better.
Yeah. Again, send it to Sean.
Yeah, it's fine.
Sean will redirect it.
You just send it to me, honestly. We're here to help ourselves and you and what we're trying to do together. So just send me an email and I'll get it for you.
All right, another question from Chuck. It would be great if you could explain the difference between SQL Server product lines in an episode. So this goes down, this was asked actually after last month's episode. And we've kind of alluded to this before. What's the difference between, you know, because we talk about Azure SQL Database, right? So what is, he's really asking, what is, because we call it, you know, SQL DB is the quick term. Well, you know, what's the difference between SQL Server and SQL DB? And so I think this just comes
down. Let me try to answer. We should do an I'll give you the short version of it. If you think about it, what we do for a living is build a relational model.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes in basically five form factors. This is the easiest way to think about it. So there's a relational model with a set of operators, keep this kindergarten simple. Those five form factors are SQL Server on-prem that you know today.
Yep.
APS, or Analytics Platform System. You know, this is our multi-node scale-out.
It was previous PDW.
Previously PDW.
Yep.
SQL Virtual Machines, just SQL Server as a VM in Azure.
Mm-hmm.
Azure SQL Data Warehouse, again, you could think of that as APS in the cloud. This is data warehouse as a service. And then finally, SQL DB. Mm-hmm. You know, you could think of that as SQL Server relational engine as a service. And the fundamental differences between the two are, you know, SQL Server, you could think of it like this. People that need access to the operating system, some people do, and instance level objects, SQL Server is a great choice for you, full control of the environment. APS is basically all about, hey, I want to do a giant petabyte data warehouse on-prem. I want it to look like a single system image. I don't want to screw around with partitioning data. Mm-hmm. I just want it to look like one image that I can, you know, run big, big queries at big data and get, you know, good, quick responses to. That's APS. SQL Server Virtual Machine is, hey, I still need control to the operating system. I still need access to instance level things like jobs,
mm-hmm.
but I don't want to run it in my data center. And that's where Azure Virtual Machines come into the picture. And then there's a class of customers that say, hey, I don't need access to the operating system. I don't want to deal with any infrastructure. But I do need to do data warehousing, or I do need to do OLTP workloads, but I just want to focus on the data. That's where SQL Data Warehouse and SQL DB enter the picture. So a SQL database, for example, if you're building an OLTP app, DR is as simple as pick a secondary region and we'll handle everything for you.
Yeah.
You don't have to like go get into the operating system and deal with any configuration at all. It's literally point, click, you know, and off you go.
Yep.
That's PaaS. And now the PaaS products are built on a different platform. And it's called Service Fabric. You might shed a little color on this.
Yeah, so basically, you know, the thing is, one of the ways we essentially went and architected SQL DB was we sort of based it on something called Service Fabric, or internally we call it Windows Fabric, that actually was built by the core Azure team. And it's a great foundation which allows us to sort of think of these as provides compute HA, where you can, you know, things like, you know, selecting the new, if a machine goes down, doing a managed failover, an unmanaged failover, selecting a new primary. A lot of these things for, you know, when you're designed SQL Server as a box product, you never thought about, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially the difference that PaaS gives you in terms of not being worrying about these things in terms of replication underneath the covers is sort of taken care of for you for things like HA and DR, like Sean explained. So it's sort of a very different fundamental architecture layering itself in terms of how this has evolved. And you know, that's one of the differences when you think about, hey, I have something in the cloud, you have to be very clear in terms of, hey, are you hosting just in a virtual machine, which effectively is the same thing where what you do on-prem, you're just sort of just getting a different environment where you don't own the physical hardware versus pass, which is a very different way of sort of really thinking grounds up in terms of the architecture of the product.
And the last thing I just add on here is that as a DBA or a developer, like with SQL Server, you really are thinking about backups and patching and operating system upgrades and very perfect configuration. I'm sure we've all gone through the 12-hour installation to get something to work. And you're like, right. Don't touch it. You know, like that's not pass. Pass, to Rohan's point, that service fabric, if you're going to have a globally distributed stateful workload, you need something like this underlying fabric that you can sort of program to APIs that understands tenants and rings and will help you with deployments. I mean, the cloud world is based on failures happening everywhere. So you need software to help you reason those failures. You can't do that with scripts. You know, you have to have a core piece of platform. But that's the quickest way I would tell you to think about relational model, five form factors, and they're different.
Great overview. All right, so Aaron points out real quick, if you got any SQL questions, there is a hashtag out there. If you hashtag, on Twitter,
SQL Help.
SQL Help.
Yeah.
So the gentleman that asked the Oracle question, the isolation level question, you can either email us or post that to at SQL Help, and everybody on the SQL Help will be able to help answer that question. All right, so let's show the email address one more time because it looks like you're about to get a bunch of emails.
Yeah.
It is SeanBI@Microsoft.com. Okay. So anything, if Sean can't answer it, he'll direct you to the right place.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen, I think that's it. We are out of time. I appreciate your time. This is great. I think maybe next episode we do a few demos on some of this stuff.
Let's do it. That sounds fun.
Cool.
Hey, enjoy your summer. Keep thinking about upgrades. I know you're getting choked up in capacity. It's all good.
All right, everybody, thanks
thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for watching.
Bye.